Welcome to my podcast, The Lisa Ann Experience. Be sure to never miss an episode. Subscribe. And if you have a minute, rate and review, please. Today, a real delight. I mean a real delight. Something new for Chris. This is going to be a shocker. Chris has no idea what's coming right now, but it is called Storytime. And some of you may remember Storytime from the past. And for my new listeners, Storytime is something I don't really touch into at this point. Not sure why, but we're going in today. Also on this episode, we have a celebrity guest who inadvertently inspired a career for me. Yep. Something I not only did for 4 years, but I actually owned a business doing it. I'm really excited to share this guest with you. And to wrap up the uniqueness of this show, a very unusual Ask Lisa Ann. Something different. I mean, this is really where you kind of want to live in my head for a minute, right? This is where you want to get to know me a bit. And yes, we get the wild questions and they're a ton of fun. I got one this week that made me laugh so hard. I saved it for next week. It's absolutely ridiculous. It was the first time anybody asked me that. And I read it and laughed, even though the creeper has asked me now like 15 more times since I initially read that first email. But we'll get to that next week because story time is here. And I don't get really into story time anymore. Last night I was talking with a girlfriend and she's like, well, you know, you don't really want to contribute. You know, you see the tone that's out there. I asked her if she thinks I'm getting like too passive in my old age. Like, I'm not a pushover, but like situations happen where I realize like sometimes you just got to stand up. So Chris, I'm letting you know. I know you're sitting down because I can see you.
Yep.
Buckle your seatbelt. Because you're in for a wild ride. So I've been kind of quiet this year on social media, and it's something I also wanted to address. I realize that just the tone, this has been a really tough year for everyone. And there's times I go to make a post and it just seems so arbitrary. Am I supposed to be acting like I'm completely, totally stoked about how things are going right now? I'm doing my best. We're all doing our best. I enjoy talking sports on Fantasy Sports Radio. It's a great escape. It gives me just enough time to chat. But when it comes to posts, quite a few times I've noticed recently where I've either gone to put something up and put 20 minutes of lost time into it and then just decided I'm not feeling it. Or I go to respond to somebody on social media and I'm like, if I engage, then I have to stay engaged. I just delete it and I just like their post instead. I've been that person. So I get it. And about a month ago, I was talking with a friend about it. And I realized I should start putting myself out there through the podcast space. You know, it's a great place for me to promote my podcast and kind of see how other podcasters are doing their shows. So you've probably noticed over the past 4 to 6 weeks, I've done a ton of different podcasts. Of course, the best and the one that I'm the most proud of was being a part of The Minimalists. I hope you went and listened to that episode. It was really special. They're very special to me. I learned a lot from them. But so the thing with podcasts is, and communication is accessibility. So with that accessibility, I'm going to talk about the fact that you know we do the Ask Lisa Ann. I read you emails, but I realized something. What you really want to know is what goes down in the DM. Like drum roll, please, right? That's what you really want to know. You want to know what goes down in the DM. I mean, these emails are wild. You can only imagine what goes down in the DM. So Chris, I don't know if you know this, but a couple of years ago, one of my New Year's resolutions was to give up direct messages.
Oh, okay.
Gave them up. They're just creep.
Probably a good idea. Yep.
Yeah, just creep laden, just annoying, just constant. I realized
you're not going to miss anything for sure.
I'm not going to miss anything. But secretly, I do talk on DM a lot to some of my friends that I've met in my travels that maybe we don't have each other's phone numbers, but we chat, or some of my league mates in fantasy football. Like
me and you.
Yeah, me and you. I'm secretly in the DM, but I'm not responding unless it's like by my choice. So most of the creepers kind of realize this chick's not, you know, giving me dick ratings. She's not texting me back. She doesn't love the video I sent her. I'm going to go, you know, pound sand, find another girl. So after giving up DM, I still though do use it sometimes. I get hit up for an interview or a podcast. And you got to know that sometimes the podcast is like a gateway drug that leads to unwarranted, unwelcomed exchanges with the same tone of needing something from me minus the creep factor. So I'll claim. It runs from about 25 50 people a day asking me to tweet things for them, promote their business, et cetera, products, what have you, follow their friends, like just needy, downright needy shit. Sometimes I just delete the messages. Again, I'm hoping that they've heard me say, oh, I don't answer direct messages. And so when I slide over the little delete thing, which is so easy on the phone, thank you, Twitter, just doop, doop, doop. But then it's mood depending. Sometimes people have asked me way too many times. Like if you've DM'd me 50 times, asked me to do shit for you, and I've never responded to you once, one day I may snap at you. So there's snappage, okay? And there have been people that I have been straight up cold-blooded. I shouldn't, because I'm afraid it's in direct message. They can screen grab it, and, you know. So now I've gotten better. I just want to ignore them. But this time, the culprit from the DM exchange was a little bit different, since I had just done and promoted his podcast a couple of weeks ago. So, of course, I responded. I responded really nicely. But obviously, I didn't give him the response he wanted. Let me read to you how this went down. Earlier, I was practicing this so I could see if I could sound like the voicemail person. So let's see if I can do it. Sunday, 3:15 p.m. writes, what's good, comma. You want to be a model for BR Kicks and get some shoes in return? Question mark.
Some shoes.
Some shoes. Thank you for laughing already, because oh, you know man. Where this is going now. 3:50 p.m. Sunday. Let's talk this week. I'm deep in these games. Let me warn you, world. If you're not talking to me about sports on Sunday, I am putting you off to my Monday list, because, like, Chris, you and I email on Sundays. It's about our fantasy football teams. We don't email 100% about work on Sundays. Else. There's no work conversation on Sunday.
Nope.
He writes back, Sunday, 3:52. For sure. So, like, I'm so diligent. Monday morning, I wake up. I'm going through all of the people I blew off, because on Sunday, they want to talk about something that was not sports related. At 8:26 a.m. Oh, jeez. Monday, 8:26 a.m. I say, good morning, dot, dot, dot. What a day in games, dot, dot, dot. My Cowboys are just so sad. Sad face. Next message. Getting back to you on the offer you presented, comma, I would like to thank you, but decline, period. I don't work for trade, period. But again, comma, thank you, period. If anyone is interested in hiring me, comma, I can pass their info to my agent. In a very separate message, I write again, thank you for thinking of me, exclamation point. This entire exchange ended yesterday morning, Monday, at 8:28 a.m. When I get into bed last night is when I'm normally going through all of the mysteries of the day, unanswered questions, like what didn't happen. So I realized he hadn't responded. So I go to check the DM exchange. And guess what? I scroll down. And guess what? At you can no longer send direct messages to this person. Learn what? More. So,
wow.
Like an idiot, because I don't really get blocked by people that often, I didn't know what it meant. So I go to the learn more category. Then I decide to just go to his page. And there it is. The motherfucker that I just did his podcast 2 weeks ago and promoted his shit decides he's going to be like that. You gonna be like that? No, this is story time. I will not be passive. My message out there, first and foremost, the rule. That means I will be doing no more podcasts for anyone else for the rest of 2020. The accessibility that I offered out of kindness to share my time with somebody, that then that same somebody blocks me because why? Oh, I don't want to leave my house and take a risk of COVID around a bunch of strangers. For free fucking sneakers.
For shoes.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, man.
So stop, everybody. Stop. 2021, I will revisit the idea of sharing my time with people. But this, when this was discovered, I screen grabbed it, sent it to my best friend. And she writes back, this is why you have to hate people. She's like, you're just too nice. She goes, just jeez. Don't do any more podcasts. Just do your own podcast. I'm like, you know what? You're right. But everybody out there, and who I know won't be listening, but if he gets a memo, here, buddy, I am so sorry that I didn't do exactly what you asked. I am 48 years old and I have busted my fucking ass to get where I am and to stay on the path that I am going. The fact that I don't want to leave my house for free sneakers, A, I'm a minimalist and I do not need any more sneakers. And B, I would rather buy sneakers than offer my time, which is more valuable than sneakers. That is the closing thought on the story. Chris, how did it feel? You never get to see this side of me. And now you know that the girl does have a backbone and is willing to share her thoughts.
I'm very proud of you. I'm glad that you stood up to him. That is ridiculous, but it's good for us because it means if the people want to listen to you in podcast form, they have to listen to this show. Subscribe, rate, download, wherever you listen to podcasts. You got to listen to this show because you aren't going to get any Lisa Ann anywhere else in any podcast form until at least 2021.
You are so correct. And that brings us to this very exciting guest. So I'm going to paint a little picture for everybody first. It was 2015 in the fall. I had just sold my day spa in Huntington Beach, California. I was taking a couple of months off, which doesn't suit me very well. I get antsy pretty quick. And during that couple of months off, I decided I was going to visit all of my friends at work. And I was driving to all these different places and taking my friends dinner, what have you. And a lot of my friends worked at the Spearmint Rhino clubs. There was also a club, the Blue Zebra, that was owned by the Spearmint Rhino. It was in North Hollywood. My friend Robert worked there. So I decided I was going to drive up and I was going to just bring Robert dinner, chill in the manager's office, have all the girls coming in with their drama. It's so fun to sit in an office of a strip club. Like, it's like better than TV. You just can't beat it. So we're sitting there talking and Entourage came up. Man, I'm like, we love this show so much, man. Ari Gold is so badass. Like, this is such a good show. The cast, the music, the girls, everything. And he looks at me and he says, you should be an agent. And I'm like, what? He's like, you should be a porn agent. You know, I know Derek Hay, he says, from LA Direct Models, which is right up here in the valley. You need to go and meet this guy. This would be the perfect job for you. Huh. I was like, that sounds like a badass gig. This is amazing. And guess what? Here we are with what I mentioned in the open, a guest that inspired a career move for me, none other than Jeremy Piven himself, who I mentioned from Entourage, but now you can see him in his new movie, My Dad's Christmas Date. The release is November 6th. Chris and I got the opportunity to watch this screener, and it was just a beautiful movie that is going to make you excited for the holidays and remind you to love your people.
Makes you feel comfortable. That was the word that we used after we'd both seen it. Just makes you feel comfortable. It's just pleasant.
It makes you feel comfortable. So everybody, let's sit back and enjoy this little conversation we were fortunate enough to have with Jeremy Piven promoting his movie, My Dad's Christmas Date. Here we go. Another amazing interview for the Lisa Ann Experience. And today we are joined by everyone's favorite, Jeremy Piven. And we are here to talk about a new movie, My Dad's Christmas Date, that you will be able to see on November 6th. And I will say, from already getting to pre-screen it, I absolutely loved it. And Jeremy, this is a very different piece for you, playing a parent and also a very romantic, beautiful story. How did you like falling into this role and really taking on that life?
Well, I got to play a guy who lost his wife. It's going to sound very morbid, and yet it was funny. He is not dealing well with grief, and he's a single parent, and he is not connecting with his daughter. And I usually have been playing the guy who's creating all the fireworks, four-page monologues, spinning out of control. And to play a character that was kind of like the audience navigating through this madness, you know, to use a dumb sports analogy, you have to play well without the ball. So you're reacting off of everything that's coming your way. And to be honest, it's actually what I do best. And I haven't ever had a chance to do it. You know, I get to play a human being. It's incredible. And I loved it. It may be one of my favorite roles that I've done. I've done about, 80 movies or something. I don't even
know.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm old. And this was just so fun for me. And Jolie Richardson plays my best friend, and she's like this incredibly brilliant actress from a family of legends. you know, and I grew up improvising, you know, in Second City and Piven Theater and blah, blah. And so a lot of my stuff in this movie was improvised. And I also studied in England. So I know she's British, that, you know, at the drama schools there, there is no improv. They don't have, now it's finally, you know, coming into fruition a bit, but they, you know, they're diving into the text, scene study and all that stuff. So I'm improvising with her and she just crushed it. But it was thrilling for her because she said it was like jazz and they never do it. So the result is, you know, a really funny and kind of, you know, a very alive and immediate relationship and performance. And so I'm glad that you liked it. And we need to see, it's like comfort food. We need a Christmas movie. Even though I'm Jewish, I'm selling out and doing a Christmas movie. I'm an Uncle Tom.
You didn't. It's funny you say comfort food, because when Chris and I, my producer, both watched the movie, the screener, it's so great to get the opportunity to feel it before the world gets to feel the love of a movie. He said it was really comforting and it was really warm. And I said, yeah, that's really the perfect word to describe it. I want to touch on something you just said, which is you got the chance to improvise a bit. So there was a line in the movie that is something I grew up with. I grew up next to a cemetery and we rode our bike in that cemetery. It was a shrine, right? So you don't have the tombstones. And that was our bike riding place. And my grandfather started with us as a kid of saying, just so you know, people are dying to get in here. And it was one of the lines you said in the movie. And I want to know, is that something you improvise? Because not everybody finds it funny, but I grew up with it. And so I still say it every time I go by a cemetery.
That's amazing. And I grew up not too far from one as well, just outside of Chicago. No, that line was very much written. And it's a great dad joke, you know, and I couldn't have written a better dad joke than that. And that's, you know, that's one of the things about comedies. What do you keep? What do you improvise? How do you just make the most of the experience for the audience? And so that's one of those moments where you got to keep that joke. And I'm glad that it landed with you, because it's just a perfect dad joke.
It's a perfect dad joke. And when I make it, people still laugh, but it's something I grew up with. And it also in a way made me not afraid of cemeteries as a kid because of the way it was presented so young. And then we would just ride our bike around in there. But back to my dad's Christmas date, I think what you're going to see, since this is something so new and unique for you, it's so very relatable. This is a scenario with, like you said, a father dealing with loss, raising a daughter on his own, and tapping into that for you. How did you really dig deep and really fall into that role? Because it's so moving and touching and so real, the way you acted this out and the way you connected with her, who was such a lovely young actress and such a great witty sense to deliver the lines that needed to be delivered. How did you fall into this, being that you're not a parent?
Yeah.
And this is something totally new for you.
Well, I'm not a parent, but I want to be. And I'm lucky enough to grow up with a really great family and great mom, sister, and my father passed away. But so I feel like, ironically, this was, you know, you use the word falling into it. It's a, you know, it's a good term, because I fell right into it. This was more authentic and closer to me than Ari Gold. Ari Gold, I would have to whip myself up into a frenzy. This is a guy, that was a guy that it was all about the money. He was an equal opportunity offender. He was reactive. He was a lunatic. And so I would have to whip myself into a frenzy to play him. And you know, playing David, playing a guy who is a decent human being that, you know, loves his kid and is trying to relate with, you know, to her. And this came so naturally to me, and it was just an honor to play it. And you know, there aren't a lot of, for whatever reason, there aren't a lot of romantic comedies anymore. And I think that the form is not broken. I think maybe, you know, people got a little sick of it, and I don't want to speculate as to why, but that's not your fault. That's our fault. You know, the people that were doing those romantic comedies wore out their welcome. And it's still a form. All of our lives are, our lives are romantic comedies.
Right.
You know what I mean? So why wouldn't we want to see more of what we're, what we're navigating? I mean, you said that, you know, you, it was comfort food watching it. So I mean, that's a, that's a great feeling, but at the same time, it's edgy and it's emotional, and it's funny and all those different things. So I love doing it and I want to do more.
And for your audience that is used to, like you had just brought up, Ari Gold and the many movies before, and how do you present this new identity as this movie comes out November 6th, My Dad's Christmas Date, starring Jeremy Piven? Your audience is going to see a completely different side of you, and how do you present that?
Well, for me, all you have to do is watch it, you know, because I can sit here and talk until you guys literally have tap out about how this is my, more of my authentic self, and I connected with this and I'm more proud of it than almost anything I've ever done. And it's, you know, something that we all need a good laugh right now, but you just got to see it, you know, because I, you know, I've been misunderstood for years, and that's not me playing the victim right now. That's just me being honest. That, and my mom called it, and I never saw it coming, that if you're in people's living rooms for a decade, as I was with Entourage, and you play a character authentically, people are going to think it's you.
Sure.
And so, you know, unbeknownst to me, you know, here I am playing a fictional character that was written brilliantly by Doug Ellen. You know, the people would go, oh, okay, so he's, you know, this guy is a type A douchebag Hollywood agent. And it's like, well, actually, I'm just a stage actor from Chicago. And I'm just like you. And so that's why My Dad's Christmas Date, this is like the perfect role. And, you know, you, people won't see it coming. And that's even more exciting. They'll be like, wait, who's this guy? You know?
And this is going to be released November 6th in theaters. And how exciting to think that this may be one of the first movies many people are going back to the theater, as we've been kind of living in this, not doing much, staying home, quarantine. Did you shoot this movie before March of this year, or were you working on it and had to stop? How did this work with quarantine and everything that's gone on?
It's perfect timing. I mean, we literally shot it this year, wrapped it, and they put it together and we got it out kind of at the speed of light. And
amazing.
People are looking for content right now. Content is like gold, new content. So
I also love the holiday feel of it, right? Because that just warms you. You know, the intro, as you start to watch and you hear the Christmas music and the lights, I mean, how can you not just lean in completely to a movie? And also, we want to be excited about the holidays, whether it's going to visit a family you don't really like being around, or whether it's going to visit the people you love being around. That's part of what this movie really brings you to. And people are going to have the opportunity to get into the theater November 6th to see this. And that's really exciting, because like you said, we really do need this right now.
Yeah, we do. We don't know. November 6th, God, think about that. It'll be just after the election. So whether you go, and we don't, yeah, like you said, we don't know. Are we, you know, what's going to be happening at that point? Are we allowed to gather and go to see a movie? Will we be watching at home? Will we be celebrating the election results? Will we be crushed? Either way, we're resilient, but either way, we need to vote, no matter what. You can't have a conversation about what's going on. You're not allowed to unless you vote.
Agreed. Agreed. And so, I had this conversation after the last election. I would ask people who were, you know, hemming and hawing, hey, did you vote? Because that's where you make your choice, right? You vote. Don't complain to me if you don't vote.
Right, exactly. And even if you say, listen, neither one of these candidates represent you, well, you know, you if you want to affect some sort of change, and if you don't think your vote counts, take a look at the numbers from the last election. They do count.
And look at the numbers that we're already pulling with early voting. But with you landing this movie November 6th, this could be the great escape for parents and families who want to get away from the television and just stop obsessing over, because, you know, with mail-in ballots, we may have a longer wait time to have the actual numbers of what's coming in. And there's no sense in everybody just sitting and obsessing. get your family out, get yourself out, escape. If there's a theater by you that is allowing people in, just take that moment. Because I know, Jeremy, you feel it as well. When I would walk into a movie theater, your brain just completely shuts off. Everything else, you turn your phone off and you just fall into this movie. And I think that's what everybody needs right now.
Completely. We do need an escape. That's for sure. Because it can feel a little overwhelming, but like we do need an escape, and we need to be told a great story. You know, that's ultimately what it comes down to, is storytelling. And I'm honored to be able to do that.
And I agree.
And this is such a fast turnaround. I mean, we literally feels like we just shot this, and 'cause that was the last time that, you know, we were kind of allowed to be on sets, it's an honor to be able to bring some entertainment and comfort food to people right now. And just go out there, or it's going to be on so many different platforms. It'll be on iTunes, video on demand. You're right. When they see My Dad's Christmas Date starring that guy, wait a minute, isn't he supposed to be yelling at the different
No,
dads?
He's beautiful.
No. There are no
it's
yelling.
Beautiful.
Lots of laughs. Thank you. I appreciate it.
The conversations you have with your daughter and My Dad's Christmas Date are just conversations that I'm sure a lot of single fathers don't know how to have. A boy in the room, you know, all of these very normal elements that come into life. Now you bring it to the surface. How much easier is it for you with this movie coming out with such a fast turnaround? You just said that it's the fastest turnaround ever. It's got to be difficult when you shoot a movie and you have to wait 2 years for this movie to actually get into a theater.
I shot a movie with Jamie Foxx with a cast that you will not believe. I'll name some of the people in the cast, and you'll say, there's no way that cast exists. Robert Downey Jr., Benicio Del Toro, Jerry Butler. And this movie was shot, we were filming it during the election of last year, 4 years ago.
Oh.
And it was completely surreal. And that it hasn't come out yet.
Oh,
we shot that movie 4 years ago. Someone needs to go to Jamie Foxx's house and go, Jamie, I'm taking it from you. You're done editing it, my man. Okay? You have nothing left to prove, Jamie Foxx. You've crushed every arena. You are hands down the GOAT. You are the most talented man in the game. We get it. Now this is your writing and directing debut. We're going to take this from you, good sir. Thank you very much. And then put it out. And then we need to laugh. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a comedy. It's called All-Star Weekend. Anyway, so that gives you an example. There's a movie I did 4 years ago. Movie I did, you know, 2.5 years ago. That hasn't come out yet. And this is a case where people just, God bless them. They knew that, like, okay, let's get on this. Let's edit it. Let's make it beautiful and put it out there, because people need to laugh and they need to.
They need to feel, you know, so many people have been separated by from their families and not being able to travel. And this really allows you to feel all of that. You brought up the title of the movie as All-Star Weekend. Let's talk about something that you didn't get to do this year. You didn't get to go and watch the Lakers win the championship. I know you're a Lakers fan. Were you watching everything going on in the bubble? And how amazed were you that all of that went off without a hitch?
I wasn't amazed, because you look at guys like LeBron James, and, you know, he's been proving them wrong for a couple decades now.
Yes.
The most celebrated player out of high school, and, you know, has exceeded all expectations, both on the court and off. And so that was really cool to see him rise to the occasion, as they all did. And that bubble was amazing to watch. Now, I'm from Chicago, so I grew up watching Michael Jordan play. And MJ is the GOAT, you know, and, you know, we all like to talk about who's the best and all that kind of stuff. I have those conversations, but it's not over. And LeBron, you know, we're looking at Tom Brady, who's 43 years old.
Yeah.
And he could, you know, he could play for as long as he wants.
Yeah.
You know, but he also gets to go home to Giselle, and he drinks oxygenated water, and he's in a celebrity space shuttle. So, you know, and he's in a cryogenic tank, and he hasn't aged since high school. So it's a little different with Tom. And if you cut Tom Brady, if you cut him he wouldn't bleed. He would actually get better looking, taller. So it's not
he would regenerate something that would be like, it would smooth his skin and make his hair even better than it is right now.
His crystal blue eyes would pierce your soul. He would always remember your name. And then you would go to sleep in his arms. It's delightful. It's really delightful.
Well, then you must have really enjoyed The Last Dance. I mean, the fact that MJ had curated this content before we were really thinking about content in the element that we do now, right? Every day is about content now, right? Social media, these clips. I loved watching the old footage of how different it was for MJ to walk around anywhere, how the fan power was. No one had that type of just excitement around them. How much did you love the series, The Last Dance?
I loved it. I mean, I was there, you know, in the 90s and because I grew up in Chicago and I was there as I was a stage actor. I had a theater company called The New Criminals with John Cusack a million years ago. So we were
the New Criminals.
Yeah, yes. We were The New Criminals, New Crime Productions. And, you know, we were doing our stage productions. I was at Second City performing and blah, blah, blah. So I was, believe it or not, I was running around with Dennis Rodman in the 90s. That's how old I am. You know, I was...
That much off in age. I'm 48. We're not that much off. So the old thing, we can't stick.
Good God Almighty. I don't know what you're doing, but I want some of it.
Don't ask. I read Tom Brady's book, I will admit. But so you're running around with Dennis Rodman, who had some of the greatest stories in the last couple drops of The Last Dance. I mean, yeah. I loved knowing that, yes, you're excused to go to Vegas because we know Phil knew that was what he needed at that time and that he would be back on the court when they needed him. I mean, talk about leadership, right? And the fact that you're creating a team, but they all have such unique personalities. And when you're focused around Michael Jordan, you know one thing, everybody has to work, show up, and win.
Yeah, and that was, I think, what was so brilliant about watching The Last Dance was MJ didn't have to make The Last Dance. You know, he has nothing up to prove. He's all good. He's set financially. He's living the dream. He's playing golf. It's all good. But for whatever reason, you know, and MJ, he made a deal with them. He said, listen, you can have total access, but he has control of the footage.
Final cut.
He's even the goat of producing. Think about that for a second.
Right?
He's got Final Cut. And he's, you know, I'm complaining about a movie I did with Jamie Foxx that's been sitting on the shelves for 4 years. He let it sit for 20 years. Okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just like, you know, like a fine, like a winery, you know, just like letting it just ferment. So MJ, what we got to see is not only is he the goat and we got to see a glimpse into this time capsule, but he was his authentic self.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, he has a competition disorder or however you want to say it, but thank God he did because it brought us memories that, you know, that are incredible. And so to watch that, we're living in a time where everyone's media trained, right?
Yes.
Bill Belichick has sat down with you, you know. Yeah, we're just going to take one game at a time, you know, block, tackle, execute. Suddenly you're wearing a hoodie, you know, you don't know what's happening.
You're eating at Subway. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, that's a whole other conversation, but, you know, you're watching these guys get interviewed and, you know, everyone is on their best behavior and to watch MJ sit there and go, yeah, you know, he still got a chip on his shoulder that Isaiah didn't shake his hand. Say what you will about, hey, man, you know, you need to let that go. You need to, you know, read the power of now. You need to meditate, Michael Jordan. You know, we got to see his authentic self and his competitive spirit is still there. I hope he and Isaiah can bury the hatchet and laugh and hug each other someday. That would be really cool. But in the meantime, we got a glimpse into who MJ was and what that would be like to be his teammate. All he wanted was the best version of yourself.
Yep.
And if you're going to be lucky enough to be on the team, you've got to bring it. And so that's what he demanded. And I love seeing that. I was lucky enough to be a part of The Last Dance. They asked me to make a video and talk about my experience. And see, you know, I'm not going to equate myself with Michael Jordan, but when they asked me, can you, you know, make a, you know, one 30-second spot for us? I said, absolutely. And I sent them 14 30-second spots because I so desperately wanted to be in The Last Dance. I was just like, look, man, you know, if I can just go one for 14, okay, which I think was MJ's batting average with the White Sox. Good night, everyone. Thank you for coming. Enjoy the veal.
You know, when you mentioned the media train thing, because athletes weren't, there was a show that I grew up with that I know you remember, and it was Arliss. Yeah. And athletes would come on Arliss and they knew nothing about being camera present, or they were so incredibly awkward. They were young. Jordan was on, Shaq was on. And I loved that show for that. Then when media training came in, it became like, that wouldn't work right now because they'd be saying all the right things that they were taught instead of just having fun in the moment. And we have had a ton of fun in the moment with you, Jeremy. I'm really excited for everyone to get out and see that your movie. Movie is My Dad's Christmas Date. It's going to be released on multiple platforms as well as theaters on November 6th. It's warm. It's magical. And I will say, I know you don't celebrate Christmas, but it really got me in the Christmas spirit, which is something we're almost forgetting is happening because of how this year has kind of just run together as a blob with no holidays, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, Santa will have a mask on when he comes down, you know, and it'll be a little awkward, you know what I mean? He can't eat the cookies this year, but it's okay. It's all right. No,
I agree.
Christmas is not canceled.
No, Christmas is not canceled, though you will not be able to sit on Santa's lap at Macy's. They've decided no Santa. I'm not sure if you know this, but even the huge lions outside of the New York Public Library are wearing masks, and the masks are like 4 feet wide, and they're over the lions. Like every statue in New York City is masked, so you know.
That's incredible. And yeah, you can't sit on, you know, Santa's trap door anymore.
You cannot.
It'll be canceled.
But what you can do for Christmas is get your family together, escape from everything that's happening, walk away from that everything, and just fall into the excitement that Christmas is around the corner. And yes, one of the greatest gifts we've gotten so far in 2020 is Jeremy Piven playing the role of a single father, which was just such a beautiful, beautiful role to watch you play, Jeremy. It's been many years. You know, I've watched everything you've been a part of. We crossed paths once at a Lakers game. At the time, I was an agent in the adult business, and I told you I was the adult Ari, and you laughed, and you were so generous and took a photo with me, and it was a pleasure to meet you there. You were diehard Lakers fan. And now here we are seeing you on a totally different level. I love this movie. I will make sure everybody that I know goes out to see this movie. Jeremy, thanks for sharing a different side of yourself on screen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Man, that was just awesome to get to actually talk to Jeremy Piven. His new movie again, My Dad's Christmas Date. But my true love from Entourage, Ari, who I was so inspired by as an agent, that when I actually got the job, it took a couple weeks to get Derek Hay to hire me at LA Direct Models. I worked there for a year. And then the first couple of weeks, he was going through everything with me. And he said, well, you know, we have company cell phones and there's company cars. You know, I had just watched The Entourage where Ari got fired. And when Ari got fired, he had a company car and a company cell phone. So when he went down with Lloyd in the underground parking to get his car, there was no car. And then when he went to use his cell phone, the cell phone was shut off. He threw it against the wall, yeah, right against the concrete wall. So I was like, I'm sorry, sir, but I just saw Ari in Entourage got fired. It didn't play out well, and I do not want that story to repeat itself with me. So I will be using my own cell phone if you'd like to give me an additional, but I'm keeping my phone and I'm keeping my car, and let's just keep this real simple. So Chris, I know you kind of binged a couple Jeremy Piven movies, and I know you also have some favorites. Let's hear what you got to say.
Yeah, well, firstly, I pretty much watch a movie every night as it is. I love movies, big movie guy. But this weekend, I went crazy. I watched as many Jeremy Piven movies as I could. I got in the mood. I got in the spirit. And I binged probably 12 movies since Thursday.
Well done.
It's now we're recording this on Tuesday morning.
I love it.
It's a lot of fun because it felt like homework.
I agree with you.
I was doing homework, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, because normally I just watch movies for the fun of it, but now I can do it for something. I've got a purpose. So I decided to put together my top five favorite Jeremy Piven roles.
Okay.
Not necessarily movies, but roles.
Okay.
But you got to take into consideration how good the movie is as well. So we'll come down from 5 to 1.
Okay.
And you let me know if you disagree with any of these, because I'm sure that that you will. By the way, I did get confused at one stage because I was binging these. There was a lot of John Cusack movies. He was playing kind of John Cusack's best friend in half of his movies. So yes. I got confused as to whether we were watching Jeremy Piven movies or John Cusack movies.
But right.
Anyway, number five. Now, this is one of the roles that's been closest to my heart for probably the longest period of time, and that's his role as Jerry Capon in The Larry Sanders Show. I've watched The Larry Sanders Show for years. I'm rewatching it again at the moment. I'm on to season 2. He only appeared in about 26 episodes throughout the 6 seasons, but he's funny, he's sarcastic. He strangely looks older than he is now.
Yeah,
his
yeah.
hairline in that is terrible. It is absolutely terrible. But As listeners of the show might know, I want to be a writer. That's one of my passions. And he's a late night talk show writer. So
yeah.
because of that reason, I kind of okay. wanted to add him to my list. So he comes in at number 5. Terrific role. Great show. If you haven't seen Larry Sanders Show, it's on HBO. Check it out for sure. Number 4, this is a movie that I had wanted to watch when it first came out, and it just slipped through my fingers, and I just got to watching it yesterday, or over the weekend, sorry. And that was Gross Point Blank. Now, this is a movie that he is John Cusack's best friend in it.
Yes.
A movie, do you know about this movie?
Yes,
have you
of
seen
course.
Gross Point
yes,
Blank?
Yes, of course.
Absolutely. Obviously, for anyone who hasn't seen it, John Cusack plays a professional assassin. He's sent on a mission to a small town in Detroit, Gross Point, where he grew up. It's the same time as his 10-year reunion, so he goes back and sees all these people from his high school, including Jeremy Piven, who he hasn't seen in 10 years. It's probably my favorite John Cusack's best friend role.
And it's a great setting.
Great
everything
movie.
About yeah, great movie. Great movie.
Really good, really funny. Minnie Driver's good in it as well. I just really enjoyed this film, really enjoyed the role. So that comes in at number 4 for me. Number 3, I had never heard of this movie a week ago. I don't think it really made a splash in Australia. But when I had told a couple of my colleagues while I was putting together this top 5 Jeremy Piven movies, pretty much every single one of them unanimously said, this is my favorite Jeremy Piven role. And it's PCU. He plays a guy called Droz. And it is fantastic. It's about a high school senior who comes to college and kind of wants to, I guess, see if this college is right for him. And he goes to this frat. And
I've never seen this one.
And now, this frat.
And now I'm adding it to my list.
It's very, very hard to find.
Okay.
It's almost impossible to find. I couldn't even get it on Amazon Prime. You can't even purchase it.
What?
I had to watch it on Plex. There's a thing called Plex, which is a streaming service. I'll give you the details later. That's what I had to watch it on.
PCU.
Can't find it anywhere. But it's really funny. And it's if you like college movies, if you like dumb college movies,
of course.
You're going to enjoy this one.
Okay.
His role is very similar to another movie that I watched called The Goods. I watched that one last night. Similar sort of character, but it's set in college. Fun, dumb college movie. Piven plays a fun, dumb college senior. It's just
fun.
It's I'm
easy
sure a lot
watching.
Of people out there would have heard it. Absolutely. Very
yeah.
easy watching. It's like an hour and 20 minutes, and it's just an easy watch. So that one's number 3. Number two and number one are very easy. Now, that was number 3. Number
okay.
2, Smokin' Aces. He
Ugh.
Plays Buddy Aces Israel.
It is so good.
Unbelievable. Now,
so
to me, this is
good.
This is the anti-Ari role, right? This is probably the only role on my list, and probably, to be honest, his entire filmography that has absolutely no trace of Ari.
Yes.
It's a terrific performance. He steals the show.
Yes.
It's unlike any of his other roles. I love it. Great movie, fun movie, huge cast, and I feel like he steals the show as well.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And it is a great cast in that movie, and it really showed you how he can expand himself as an actor, just as he
oh,
did
yeah.
in this movie, My Dad's Christmas Day, really surprised the world of, like, I can do anything.
Absolutely. And obviously, one, there's no doubt whatsoever about it. It's Entourage, Ari Gold, the absolute pinnacle of his career, now and forever. One of the greatest characters in TV history, not just for Jeremy Piven, but for anyone.
I agree.
Ari Gold is the absolute best.
I agree.
Here's the thing that kind of probably works against Jeremy Piven. His voice is so distinctive, and now his voice is Ari. So when you're watching these other movies,
you hear Ari.
You just keep thinking Ari, 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 because his voice is so distinctive. And that's why I wanted to put Smoke and Aces at number two, because I just don't hear Ari when I watch him there. But everything else comes from this role of Ari Gold.
I criticize one thing. Leaving old school out of any movie list is so difficult. Listen, yeah. He was the greatest Dean ever. I mean, it was just that role. But I mean, his role wasn't as large in old school as it was in these other movies that you chose. So I totally get it.
But also, to me, I don't think of him when I think of old school. Okay. I love old school. Okay. It's awesome.
You think of Vince
that
Vaughn.
That role, fantastic. Vince, I think of probably three or four actors before I think of him. Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell,
earmuffs,
those
earmuffs.
Guys steal the show. Absolutely.
What I love about going back and watching old school is remembering like these actors are still really relevant in our lives today. And we've watched them grow up in front of us, right? And they've been having fun. Yep. And laughing together for 20, 30 years now. And it's just so special to know, like, they were at the beginning. None of them knew when old school was out that they were going to be in Hollywood permanently, successful permanently. I don't think any of them could have even had that thought yet, right? So there's something cool about going back and watching a show. It's kind of like Anchorman. Anchorman's another one. Everyone that's come from Anchorman is somewhere, but that's a great list. I like it. I love the interview. I want all of you to get in the vibe of Christmas. I want you to all to feel what we got to feel and go and see My Dad's Christmas Day. Yeah, Jeremy did say it's going to be available in multiple platforms. So if you don't get to go to the theater, you should be able to watch it at home. Just search it and you'll find all your information. And now the wild ride that is my inbox, Chris. Normally,
this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Normally, in reality, we go with these wild questions, which again, we mentioned I saved one for next week because it's so wild. But this is also supposed to be when everybody truly gets to know me. So because of the nature of our amazing interview with Jeremy Piven, I selected some more serious questions for our Ask Lisa Ann segment. So like many families do around the holidays, including Chris, our Aussie sensation, who is coming off the bench to read the emails today. Picture us sitting around the table, eating, drinking, and telling stories.
Well, just real quick, by the way, you mentioned that it feels like I was coming off the bench, and that's kind of the analogy that we've been using when I come on for Ask Lisa Ann. This week, because I think this is the most amount of time I've actually come on air in an episode, it feels like the last week in the NFL season, a team's about to make the playoffs. They bench all their starters. The second team is coming and play the full game. That's what it feels like for me. We're a week out from the playoffs, and I'm playing the full game. I'm doing homework. I'm watching tape. I watch tape all weekend. I'm coming back in for Ask Lisa Ann. That's what it feels like right now.
I love it so much, Chris. Yeah. It's fantastic. Everyone loves hearing from you, so this is great. And yeah, you're a starter right now, only because we're benching everybody else because we're about to get the playoffs run going. But
yep.
You know, just really the nature of the guest and the family feeling just resonated after watching Jeremy Piven's new movie, My Dad's Christmas Date. And as I consider you my listener, my extended family, let's chat.
Let's do it. First question comes from Jeff. Jeff says, I just listened to your interview on the Hard in the Paint podcast. You asked a question to the host about how his parents took to the news of him wanting to go into sports broadcasting journalism. I would love to hear about your inner circle reacted when you told them this was going to be your next journey. Thanks in advance from Jeff. Nice question.
Nice question. And Jeff and I talk a lot on social media. We have a lot of fun before I do live shows like on Facebook. We do this like under over total, how quickly and how many people will like ask to see my feet or ask for me to take my clothes off. So before we go on, he'll say, okay, 20 people are going to ask for you to take your clothes off. 8 people. I'm like, all right, I'm going 11 people out. So we have this whole fun. It makes it a lot more fun. By the way, I've learned how to get the weirdos out of my rooms when I'm doing live. I read. I just go to ESPN. I read the whole NFL schedule. We dropped 300 people by the time I finished reading the schedule. Yeah. So I know all I have to do is read. So that's been great. But Jeff, this is a great question. And let me answer this question. It's going to take a minute because again, Chris, you're seated. I hope everybody that's listening is seated.
Yep.
Let me start this with saying a quote that a friend of mine shared with me years ago. Parents are just people. There's no handbook. Okay? Keep
that's that. That's where he
was. Keep that in mind. I haven't seen or spoken to my parents since August of 2015. At that point, I had already been on air with SiriusXM since 2013. Every time I would go home and see my parents during that time, which was pretty easy, I would take the bus from New York City to Easton, Pennsylvania, because at that time, my grandfather was in a nursing home and my neighbor, Peggy, who I was very close with, was in a nursing home. So I got to close out their lives really well by seeing them a lot and spending a lot of time with them. It's just such an easy trip and I loved doing it. And so each time Sirius would have a free offer, or each time I knew like, oh, somebody got a new car, I know you have Sirius, I would like each time I went home, hey, have you guys listened to my show yet? Hey, have you guys listened to my show yet? My dad, it was just like over his head completely, doesn't in denial. To my mom, I realized like, you know, porn was just outweighed anything else. My parents will be always more disappointed in me because of my choices than they'll ever be proud of my success. And so trying to share in my success was kind of an agitator. And when I would ask, it would always get this like, oh, you know, we're so disappointed in you. So it would go to that. So it was 2015, August. I had given my book to my editor. I wouldn't have any say in any changes. And it was coming out in December. So I decided I should go home and tell my parents I wrote a book. Who knew that at that time, their fear of me sharing our truth, things that weren't great in my family, which by the way, I didn't put in the book. I just said, if you had a good childhood, celebrate it, because not everybody did. And I thought, okay, we're going to probably, maybe they'll read the book. Maybe they'll reach out. But they were so, dad, I wrote a book. He changes the subject and tells me about the neighbor that died. I mean, my dad, like, he only talks to you about what he wants to talk to you about. He and I have had maybe 20 plus years of relationship talking, right? Like he was in my life when I was young. And then I didn't speak to him. We didn't speak again until I was in my 40s. And then like 3 years. And then now this happened. So my parents have been very intermittent in my life. And so what I told my mom, she was like, she just lost all the color in her face. Like the fear factor was just so intense. And I knew that trip, that conversation made her so uncomfortable that it was going to be the last time I saw her for maybe a while. Well, flash forward to COVID and, you know, everything happening in the world and there's a pandemic. And I thought this would probably be the time where my parents may reach out. They didn't reach out. During the pandemic, I also recorded my audiobook and I had to go back into a time capsule of when I did and was forcing a relationship with my family. And I had to go back into that. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they haven't reached out to me. I can't believe they probably don't even know where I live at this point because we didn't communicate. They don't know that I moved from California to New York. They have no interest, trust me. But again, I opened this for a reason with parents or just people. There's no handbook. I'm past having any grudges or feeling like I got slighted. Life is just life. And I'm so lucky to have what I have. I'm lucky to have the experiences that I've had and the friendships and the love and the people around me. But it's very different growing up and becoming a teenager and having no parents. Your whole perspective of life changes. And if you asked yourself at 16, what would you do for a living at 18 if you had no parents? I mean, I think a lot of people would be like, I'll do porn. Like things are very different and putting yourself in my head maybe kind of helps you understand where the decision-making process was and how I am now. But I'm well adjusted and I'm good and not everything works. So my parents never listened to one of my fantasy sports shows in that first 2 years. And since we haven't talked since then, I'm pretty certain they're not listening now. So Jeff, I wanted to tell you that because obviously, you know, my last book has everyone thinking that I still have a relationship with my parents. And one of the things that's been a bit hard to complete with my new book is telling the story that I wrote on the bus home from that last trip. I wrote 3 pages of how I just felt in my heart that I was never going to see my mom again. So that's proved to be true. And I thought I would share that because around the holidays, there's a lot of people out there that don't have family. And you got to just stay extra close to your friends, find things that bring you joy, do things for yourself, like enjoy a good book and not worry about anything. But not everybody has the same situation. And that's what makes us all beautiful and unique people.
Or you can just spend every night watching Jeremy Piven movies. And
I was thinking about binging Entourage again because I went and watched it
on
YouTube. And I was like, he brought out such an evil side of me as an agent, like collecting money. Like I did, I mimicked so many things he did.
Like the stress ball or whatever, he, like the wrist.
I had a putting green. I had a putting green in my office. Yes. All right, next question.
This is from Dallas. And Dallas says, if I had a chance to interview you, my first question would be, where did your love for sports come from? I know that's generic, and you may have told that story, but I haven't heard and am genuinely interested. A second question, if I was allowed, is Dallas allowed to ask a second question?
Yes, he's allowed. Cool.
Dallas would ask, is there a team out there that you live and die with? Wins make your days brighter and losses can ruin a day. Thank you for taking the time to read these and hope your podcast blows up. Me too, Dallas. Love to hear you talk sports and own your spot against amongst the boys. Keep doing you. Sincerely, Dallas. Man, these are very nice emails this
week.
See,
I have a folder for nice emails. Yeah. Okay, I have stalkers, weirdos, perverts, like foot guys. You know, I have them all, but this is nice questions.
Nice emojis as well throughout.
And great punctuation, Dallas. So a shout out to pleasing me with punctuation. First of all, my love for sports. Growing up in the Northeast, you know, where we have these long winters, sports land at the right time. You start to get into the NBA season, it's starting to get too cold to play basketball outside, so you're watching inside. We always had the Nerf basketball hoop above all the doors, like, sick. So you could, like, play Nerf, you know, because I could dunk that thing, just bounce right back up. And you know, I only saw my dad on Sundays, and my dad watched football. And my dad watched football with no volume on the television. We listened to Italian music. My dad hates sports broadcasters, okay? And I became a sports broadcaster. He hates them. So I had to really learn what the referees were calling, what the plays were. And then I would wait till commercial, and sometimes I'd ask my brother, you know, what just happened? Why was that penalty? This and that. But when you can't hear football and you want to be in the same room, you know, because it was my one day a week seeing my dad, my brother, and I would just, we'd watch football all day. So that's really how football came into my life. And my mom dated a basketball coach for Lafayette College. And she was a basketball mom who would cook meals for the home and away teams with other moms so that they could have a meal before they hopped on the bus and went back. And so we got to go to every single Lafayette game. So my social life revolved around just sitting at those games, and it got us out of the house. We didn't have a lot of money. So like that for us was like a great activity. And it made me not only love basketball, but it made me play basketball all through school. So I played basketball. Yes, I did. And I am very excited because I am now going to have access to a basketball court, and I will be playing as an add-in on my workouts.
Oh man, that's awesome.
So that was a great question too.
I miss playing basketball, man.
I love it.
I miss playing sport at all. Organized sport, whether it's basketball, baseball, whatever. I miss going out there and firstly training and playing both.
I love how you say sport.
Sport. Yeah.
I like you say sport instead of sports. I love it. I love when you say sport.
That's the Australian way.
Yeah, it is.
Next question is from Steve. And Steve asks, what do you think has been your biggest challenge either getting into or just being in the sports industry? Also, what is the best sports moment you've seen live?
So the biggest challenge of getting into or just being in the sports industry is it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of studying. There is news dropping at any hour of the day. It could be an injury, an arrest, a whatever. But there's no taking days off and applying yourself for like an hour and being able to fake it in the sports world. You know, you see a broadcaster make a mistake and you have a different empathy once you're doing it because you realize like he's been on camera for 3 hours. He doesn't know this news story just broke. I mean, there's a lot to it. And so I just really think it's the time involved. And I will say that everyone through SiriusXM really helped me, and everyone on Fantasy Sports Radio worked with me to make me better and had me on their shows, and listening to the channel just helped me really get the cadence of everything. So that was the challenge. I'm going to give it to one sporting event, even though I have some backups. The best sporting event I ever saw live was getting to go to the Kentucky Derby in 2017. And I went with friends who are friends with a man who had a ton of horses in a ton of races. So we got to actually go down and walk out with the horses. It was such an epic scenario. The way everyone's dressed, everything about the event was incredible. Now, this year, 2020, I got to go to the Super Bowl in Miami. Who knew that would be the one cool thing I got to do this whole year, which makes it even cooler. And when I lived in Los Angeles and I was a porn agent, I had access to go to Lakers games like crazy. And if I brought girls, I got even better seats. So I was constantly going to games. So there's that.
Nice one. Next question is from Efrain. My question is, have you ever thought about coaching males into the industry and guiding them into what it takes to have a successful career?
Well, you know what, Chris? We just had the pleasure of having my good friend Eric Everhard on. So I'm going to pass this right here and tell Efrain you should follow my friend at Eric_Everhard on Twitter. He just put out a new book. Mine came from Amazon 2 days ago, and you need to learn how to make love like a porn star. He's your guy. He's also a coach who you can connect with online. So give him a follow at Eric_Everhard, and he will be your guide.
Short, simple, and to the point. Love mm-hmm. it. Last question is from Starpoint2112.
Sounds like he's on a mission, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I'm going up in a spacecraft after this email.
If you were given a magic wand to make things better in the adult entertainment industry, such as legalize, what would be legal/not legal, setting age limits, how it can be produced? Essentially, what criteria would you set as the standard so that the industry could flourish, grow, and be safer than it is now?
So Starpoint2112, I hope you're back from your mission to get this on the podcast. First and foremost, I would connect the states with the production companies, and I would start full health screenings when talent is coming into the industry. That would really be the responsibility of the agent, but it would be so incredibly helpful. And through those health screenings and understanding everything, like when was your last tetanus shot, to have you ever been tested for hepatitis? All of these things, we now have a start point of what we're working with here, right? So health screenings would be a big one. Background checks. We don't do any background checks. You know, guy walks onto a set with a big schlong. Guess what? He gets a job. He could have just got out of jail for murdering 25 people. We know nothing about these people at all. Sometimes they have fake ID. You know, so there's that disconnect. And you know, we need to legitimize, destigmatize, and allow some things to be understood within the world. I'll tell you, just last year, I was wanting to switch over to a different bank, and the bank would not take my account. And it was just because I'm affiliated with the adult industry. Now, long and the short of it, yes, you can get a lawyer, you can make a big deal about this, but I'm not one to do that because I've been turned down for things so many years over my life. And if you did a background check on me as an adult, I've never been arrested. I've never been in trouble. I've always paid my taxes. Like, I should be treated just like anyone else. So by legitimizing how we view the entertainers, if everyone is watching the content, why are we so hard on the people in the content? So we need to legitimize that. Destigmatizing what everyone is doing is just a different art form, and it's bringing pleasure, right? So if people are enjoying the webcam girls, why should those same webcam girls not be able to be enjoyed by the world and be treated equally? I would also say, and this is something that I get a lot of shit for, everybody knows it, I am not pro prostitution being legalized. And, you know, when they say sex work, it's such a vast range, right? I don't like to consider myself a sex worker because to me, it sounds like you're in a machine shop room with like a sweatshop. Like it just sanitizes it so much. I'm an adult star, you know what I mean? But some people will consider sex work under prostitution, under everything. But for me, you know, prostitution, it's too easy of a choice for young women for money. And it has a lot of burden on mental health. Has a lot of burden on safety, has a lot of burden. And after those, all of those things are happening with someone so young when there could have been other opportunity, whether it be webcamming or dancing or shooting movies, prostitution is a more private way to go about it, but it affects the stars that do it and the girls that do it so much more. And there's a lot of bad things that happen. So I understand that people believe if we made it legal, it wouldn't be as risky for the girls. And I understand that there are some girls that like it, but I think it is still human trafficking. You are still purchasing someone at the most human, purest, intimate form. And to me, I think that we would be better off if we kept that out in Nevada, outside of the city limits at the Buddy Ranch. Guys can just fly out there and go to a brothel and have a good time. But I think to protect the teenagers out there who may need fast money, this isn't the way to go about it. And I'd rather see them dancing. So Starpoint 212, I hope that wasn't too much for you, but I have lots of ideas and I hope that we get to follow through with them down the road for the industry.
Great questions this week.
Yeah, I kind of paired them up. We had a great guest in Jeremy Piven. We had the at rule enforced, no more podcasts through 2020. I just freed up my schedule. I had like six. I canceled them all. I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. Just had a run-in with somebody and I just decided ixnay on the podcast, I ain't doing it. But what you're going to do is you're going to subscribe if you haven't already. You're going to rate and review the podcast, write something nice, make me smile. I love it. I love it. Don't forget to submit your questions to asklisaann@gmail.com. And Chris, thank you for being a star today, as always.
Oh, I try. Hopefully we can get another actor on in the next month or so and I can have my weekend binge again, because that was a lot of fun. It gives me an excuse to sit on my ass all weekend. I love it.
And you know me, I like when we have writers on because I get to binge their book and I'm like, oh, just let me read the whole thing cover to cover. I love it so much. But I love doing this podcast. And Chris, you've made it amazing. Thanks for everything, everyone. I hope you enjoyed today. And I will talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.